Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Ashwini.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have announcements to start us off here.
Yes, thank you.
Our Reflective Listening Buddies program offers awareness practitioners unique support. It requires participants to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. A new quarter of this popular program begins July 15th. Do you find that your efforts to keep a commitment are sabotaged by conditioning? The Keeping Commitments Buddy program, also starting July 15th, pairs participants with a buddy for accountability and support during this compassionate training. The Summer of Sangha is starting soon. Our spiritual home at 4 Acres Zen Center in gorgeous Sequim, Washington, will host week-long and weekend retreats offering yoga, meditation, guidance, and workshops. In addition, it will be possible to accept the precepts with this practice during the summer offerings. One slot is available in the week-long retreats of June 14th, June 30th, and July 14th, and several openings are available in the weekend retreats. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, please press star 6 and then 1. And a conversation on one topic, please. And about 5 minutes is great. And Ashwini, I'm going to encourage folks to get in the queue also.
Yes, we're doing queue practice.
Queue practice, yes. And we're ready to get started here, Ashwini. First caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, this is Helga from Charleston.
Hey, Helga.
Hello. So I have been listening to Sherry's answers to the various questions that were sent in for a new book.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a bit of she talked quite a lot about projection. And, you know, it's something that I'm not sure if I can give you a concise question, but I realize that there's like certain, I'm not exactly sure that I really understand it. So there was one question that had to do with the suffering and misery in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the first point that Sherry made to the person that asked that question was that that is a projection.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that would be one
so
part of
I,
my question.
Yeah, may I, Helga?
This, okay.
this resonates for you, right? It's a projection because you are having that experience.
I was having, I can't, I don't know.
So meaning that whoever says that the suffering in the world is the person having the experience, that's a projection because all experience that there's suffering in the world, it's not that, that's the first thing to understand about a projection, right? I'm the one projecting. So if I project, it's like saying, this is beautiful, right? Whether it's beautiful or not, I'm having the experience that it's beautiful. I'm projecting that it's beautiful. I'm projecting that there is suffering in the world. So to recognize that, to make a statement like there's a lot of suffering in the world, or I feel sorry for those people who are suffering, the first place in projection is to follow it back to where it's happening. It's happening for me.
Well, I guess, you know, I mean, I can see that. And I mean, you know, when I read the news or I hear the news, I, you know, I see images, you know, of whatever, you know, pick anything you like, the war in Gaza, you know, it's like, I mean, anything really. It seems to me that it's pretty obvious there's a lot of suffering happening.
Uh-huh. But it's
so I just, yeah.
So there's the second thing we say about projection, right? Just because you're projecting it doesn't mean it's true. But the importance of projection in awareness practice is to follow it back to say, I'm having that experience because somebody, so let's just say that there's a war in Gaza and you project that there's a lot of suffering. Somebody who is reading that newspaper may or may not have the same experience as you're having.
Yeah, I guess that it would be very hard for me to imagine that somebody else would think they're all like having a big party over there.
Which is a spiritual
point.
Which is the spiritual point, right? Because that, to get that we're creating the world that we live in because we're projecting it and looking at how that process happens. So, and that's how a war happens, right? Because I project X and somebody else projects Y. We all live in our universes of one, and then we go to war over it. Because we don't understand that I'm the only person having that experience. It may or may not be that we have shared on vocabulary to say, this is a tree, and this is color green. But my experience of green is my experience of green. Whether it's your experience of green or not, is something that I can't know, right? That's really the point. I mean, we can have a philosophical debate about, does suffering exist, empirically speaking, in the world? Yes or no? But whenever I experience suffering, it's my experience of it, which I then project onto everybody else.
I'm sorry, I lost you there. It's like you kind of, you're a little... It's sometimes hard to hear you, or I have a hard time hearing you. Yeah. So I missed the last
part. That's a great catch, Helga, right? There it is, because it's all doing it. I have a hard time hearing you. That's it,
yeah.
Right? That is just what happens when we understand projection. So we could say, can you hear me now? Am I good?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. We could say, you're angry with me. But when I say I project you're angry with me, we own the experience where the experience is happening, right? And then I can take responsibility for what's going on for me. I can ask you, are you angry? Rather than assume you're angry and based on my projection, act from that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then another question that came up for me is that so? You know, Sherry was talking in a different answer. She was talking about that our natural state is enlightenment. And you know, I wonder, you know, is it ever possible to perceive reality as reality is? Is there a reality? Is there something to perceive? And you know, if I kind of always thought, you know, it's kind of like, you know, coming from a conditioned place, it's kind of like a mirror that's dirty. So whatever gets mirrored is like, you know, dirty and fuzzy and wrong, not really just a clear mirror of reality. But is there such a place where you can actually see reality for what it is?
Good question. And here's the response I've heard from Sherry and from everyone every enlightened being who's ever asked that question is, when you get there, you'll know.
See, now you conked out again for me. I missed the important answer.
You heard. Pardon?
I didn't hear what.
Let me try it in a different way. Is this better?
Yeah, right now. Yep.
Okay.
So I think the question you asked is, if we are inherently enlightened, whether or not we can experience reality as is, if there's a conditioned, if there's a conditioned mirror on it. And my response to that is, just what, if you ask that question of anyone who is enlightened, their response would likely be, when you get there, you'll know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? Because okay. we have so many we have so many people who have had the direct experience, have spoken from that place, have given us breadcrumbs to get there, and almost everyone has said that that experience is something that you are. If you don't have that experience, it's really, really hard to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we
I understand that. It's just, you know, I think the question for me is like, is there a reality other than what our projection of it is? Is there anything there? Or is it just all emptiness?
Well, we don't know.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. Whether you ask a scientist or you ask a spiritual person, the answer will be the same, right? Just in different terms.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because at the quantum level, everything's probability. So if you fix one thing, then the other thing changes. If you fix the other thing, and so I project, I don't know this, but I project, at least for me, in my experience, the curiosity to find out is what causes us to do spiritual practice, to read spiritual literature, and to engage in a process which is very much part of the spiritual tradition, which is you read a verse that is an said by someone who is enlightened, and you do koan practice with it till you keep...
Mm.
Till you keep trying to go to the experience that the verse is pointing you to, especially something that talks about awareness and consciousness and the ultimate reality. When you start pursuing those dimensions of spiritual practice, you engage with that, trying to get to the experience that is being pointed at.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think that's I think that was those were the immediate questions that came up for me when I was listening today. So thank you.
And Helga, mm-hmm. I would absolutely encourage you to call back in and have further that discussion with Sherry, who I project
mm-hmm.
to be more qualified to answer it than me.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Helga.
Thanks for joining us, Helga. And Helga, I cannot mute you, so if you can mute yourself and call back in,
okay.
That'd be great.
All right.
And Ashwini, we're going to move to Good News Update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Hi, it's Dan.
And Jen, I'm turning it over to you for a Good News Update.
Okay, perfect. And as you hear, I'm pleased to be joined by Dan, who is here to speak to us about his experience of participating in Keeping Commitment Studies. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you.
So perfect timing, as we heard in the announcement. So the new quarter is just open for registration. So you're right on cue.
I was smiling about that, how life
yeah.
organizes everything.
Perfect. Yeah.
Shall I just launch in?
Please.
up front, my, in quotes, success rate was maybe 40%. On the commitments, and I just want to get that out there because it absolutely doesn't matter.
That's brilliant. I don't want to interrupt your flow, Dan, but that is absolutely brilliant. So in other words, you're talking about you'd signed up for the program to have a commitment buddy, and your, quote, success rate at keeping the commitment was about 40%.
Yes.
Excellent. And it turned, love it.
So Sherry often says it's not about keeping, or I mean, the, you know, practice says it's not about keeping the commitment, and I got to have a direct experience of that. Mm-hmm. And so I kept the commitment, and the buddy said, Gassho. I failed at the commitment, and the buddy said, Gassho. And it's hard to convey without signing up how much that confounds ego. I am supposed to get approval when I keep it. Mm-hmm. And condemnation. I didn't realize that. I was ego also wants condemnation because that's attention.
Wow.
It's a duality. Approve of me, disapprove of me. Approve of me, disapprove of me. And it's just Gassho.
Yeah.
Gassho. And it wears you down. It wears ego down. So getting to
so
see
Dan,
that duality was amazing. Go ahead.
Can I just quickly, underline. So, so the structure of the program being that at the beginning of a quarter, 3 months, you get to say, okay, here's my commitment. Could be anything. You know, here's one little thing I'm going to do each day. Here's a huge project I'm working on. Here, whatever it is. And then each day you get to whatever time you want to, you know, say. It could be the middle of your day, the end of your day. You get to say to the commitment buddy, I did this thing, or I didn't keep my commitment today. And you're pointing out how profound it is that no matter what you say, I kept my commitment. Every single one of them, or I didn't do any of them. The response is Gassho, and how confounding that is to the conditioned system, to ego.
Yes. And there were some technical difficulties that occurred, and so sometimes I would say I kept my commitment, and I would get, so if you forget to text, the reply is, you know, a text was not received, Gassho. And I sent in a text, and because of the technical difficulties, it wasn't received. And then I would get a text was not received. And oh my goodness, the rage. I did a good job. And it's not being recognized.
I did text. I kept all my commitments and I texted. And you're accusing me of not texting.
Accused. Speaking of blame. And also just here's the restraint and religious observance. You just text whether you kept it or not. And the urge to text why I didn't keep it, to make excuses, to give reasons, to rationalize, and just the simple absolute beauty of just being able to, you can't. Just the and it just cuts ego off.
There's nowhere for it to go. It can't do its usual. Well, I mean,
it can't
I
do its
really,
usual
really
thing.
Meant
no,
to.
That's it.
It's just that. Right. Someone was talking about that on the show this morning. As you say, talk about blame. It's perfect timing, right? So, and someone was talking about that on the show this morning, realizing before an interaction has even happened, there's already the, I'm sorry, oh, I didn't need to, oh, I just, you know, the whole I'll take the blame is already set up. So all those conditioned things that we don't even really realize are going on or that are controlling us until there's a structure like this to show us, to have it come up, to sort of run into.
To run into, yeah. And man, do you run into it. The kindness of practice you see after the fact. And the other miracle, another miracle that occurred, I actually liked keeping the commitment. The thing, it was my commitment happened to be stop watching videos, you know, no more videos after 8:30 p.m. just to help my sleep. And in quotes, or oscillating between, in quotes, succeeding and failing, I got just to see both experiences without judgment.
Yes.
How I slept when I looked at videos and how I slept when I didn't look at videos. And I had direct experiences of both. And so it wasn't, I should do this, I shouldn't do that. It was, I really prefer not watching the videos. And it was just that simple. All the energy was taken out of it.
So, you know, what I really hear you saying, Dan, I mean, this is very obvious, but I don't think I've ever seen it quite directly this way, that what this program does is it assists us to strip the self-hate out of the equation.
Yes.
Right? Because we're all always in that process with a million things in our lives. And something like, you know, I don't want to watch videos after 8:30 at night, that's a support to me. That's something I want. Right? And I'm going to get talked out of it 100% for all these different reasons, right? And I could justify it, but with a simple structure like this, where you just kept practicing with it, and there was no, you know, praise if you did do it and condemnation if you didn't, but just the information, you got to just watch your experience, and it sounds like get to a place of, oh, I want to keep this commitment because it's really supportive to me, not because I should, not because it makes me a good person or I'm trying not to be a bad person, but because it's what really supports you.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can feel the little, it's still a good thing to do and you should do it, trying to pull me back in, but.
Yeah, of course. So that's why people do the program month after, quarter after quarter after quarter.
Yeah. I've already signed up, so
yeah. Excellent.
Perhaps the highest recommendation. This is dropping in, so I guess I'll share it. In any of these things, like a guided imagery or something where it's like, pick this memory or pick that thing, it doesn't matter what you pick.
Yeah.
Don't try to make it the thing, like I'm going to exercise 40 hours a week. I'm going to, you know, do a marathon.
Right.
I'm going to put my keys in this one spot every day.
The
smaller and more concrete, the better. Otherwise it becomes.
Boy, that concrete piece is helpful too, isn't it? Because then at the end of the day, you really can say, yes, I kept that commitment, or no, I didn't. Whereas if it's something nebulous, you're going to get pulled into a conversation. Well, was it enough? Was it really enough? You know, I'm going to be open-hearted with everyone in my life.
Yeah.
Right? At the end of the day, boy, is there going to be a big conversation about whether or not I was open-hearted, right? Yeah.
So, That's what's, I don't know where we are. I forgot to note the time when we started and how much time we have left.
Well, we're actually closing right in. So that's, once again, you're right on cue.
Okay, my parting thought is, do it! Just sign up! Do it! Because you never keep it, it's just you get a lot of gastros, so that's nice.
I mean, it's really true, Dan. I'm doing the new Making a Change for Good book, the revised edition recently came out. And, of course, very much the same process. I mean, that's what that book is centered around, compassionate self-discipline. And you finish the book, and at the end there's a 30-day retreat, and Sherry makes that point, exactly what you're saying in the book, which is that, you know, you might quit this 40 times. And, you know, that's fine. In fact, it's good because you're going to see so much in that process. And that's all it's about. It's what we're always saying in practice. It's about seeing it, not about becoming, you know, self-improvement, becoming the person I think I should be or the voice tells me I should be, or, but all that we get to see in that process. And this, you know, when someone originally thought of this, not even that long ago, you know, a number of years back, wanting for themselves an accountability structure, but something very simple, exactly as you described, you know, not where I'm going to back and forth and justify myself and, you know, make excuses and blah, 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 but something very, very simple, but wanting someone at the other end of that and Sangha, because then, you know, within the privileged environment, there, you know, what a brilliant structure. There's no personality in it. It's just that simple structure of showing up and being mirrored in that very straightforward way.
Amen.
Amen. Well, thanks for being with us today to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Go happy.
You too.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dan, and thank you, Jen. And welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is June. cue practice. Let's see. Oh, gosh. I've been talking lately about getting going along and doing great, being able to most any time just kind of drop into, you know, the place of it's kind of a broad perspective place that feels very loving and supportive and clearer. The voices of negativity and self-hate and judgment get just the barest toehold, if any hold at all. And then finding myself unable to find that place. I think we've all had that experience. I don't know. I kind of lost my words here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So to go along and to have an expansive place in practice, right, where you have the voices are not so loud, there's the ability to drop into happiness, and then suddenly find that you're not having that experience.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the reactions to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know. The experience of we've all talked about this, we all know this. The questions start, well, why did you leave the other place? What have you been doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep trying? This always mm-hmm. happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know you've always been unwilling. Mm-hmm. You know that you've been faking it for the last 40-something years.
Yes.
You've never been honest with yourself. Wake up one morning and, for whatever, maybe it's just energy movement, who knows what it is, but mm-hmm. you just can't quite touch into that place that I can't quite find. That place is just not quite as accessible anymore in mm-hmm. that moment. And it's just pile on. All right, we got her now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So that here you are, in that place where it's hard to access the happiness, and then the self-hate piles onto that. And so,
yeah.
So June, I project that you're not in that place right now? Or are you still in that place?
I am not in that place. I feel the lingering effects of it. Of the self-hating place, of the dark room, we'll call it the dark room, the bamboozle, all of those great terms that you guys have come up with. But yes, just through participating, through getting in the queue, through listening to the guidance given to other people. I recently just really heard what it was that had been clouded over. I heard the information that that parted the clouds, that parted the Red Sea, that whatever parted, and there was the, you know, the place of non-separation.
Well, I think you're pointing to the how of it, right, June? Because you could be going along in a totally expansive place and then find yourself in a non-expansive place and go, okay, well, I'm listening to the voice and I'm going to quit. But what I mean, having practiced for so long, I think part of what grows in us in experience is that there's an expansion and a contraction, but both in the expansion and the contraction, I don't stop doing an awareness practice, right? And that's what you did. You didn't stop practicing. You were still participating. You were still putting yourself in the queue. You were still listening to the calls. You were doing what the guidance was being given, And through that process of, in my words for now, you know, when we were looking at this in the Musings article, right? Receptivity to grace, which is that place of happiness, right? That place of openness where we're feeling or in touch with the intelligence that animates our authentic nature, is always there. However, the question is, when we're not experiencing it, if we're listening to the voices, we quit looking for it. Rather than what we train ourselves to do is to keep looking for it, especially when we're in the dark room, right? And so the process of looking for it is exactly what you're saying, which is I participate without any outcome. Yes. But my job, however I'm feeling, is not to stop doing the things that are my awareness practice. And then grace will find me. Because I project that the voice in the head is gunning for you to listen to it and to quit the process, to exit the process. And what we're training to do is never to exit the process of looking for grace.
Yeah, yeah.
And the harder it gets, it feels like the test, right? But the harder it gets to find it, the more I look, not I quit.
Yeah. Well, you know, yes. In the earlier days of practice, when I would have something like the experience I've been having of finding myself in a deep, dark pit, and I've said this many times, the only thing that I can say about practice, I'm trying not to use personal pronouns, but I will, in a concession to speech, the only thing that I can say about myself is I never quit. I could have quit so many times, and I did not.
Yes.
And, yeah. You know,
well,
And I take no credit. It just
precisely, because all of the we could point to the way of transformation, right? The zones of annihilation. The reason we go through that is to find that which is non-destructible, that which is always there, that which is essential, that happiness that I'm in touch with in those expansive moments. That is always. That's who we are, right, June? That's what we discover.
Yeah.
That we don't, whatever gets worn away in this process, and something always does, because we always see something, we always let go something, we always learn something, whatever it is. But the essential is always there after the experience, right? Whatever the abyss is, it went through the abyss, but it wasn't destroyed in the abyss.
Yes. Yeah. Once the light room has been experienced, even in the darkest room, you remember the light room is there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that's such a strong, I mean, we did a whole year long on recollection, right? That's what we train. And because we train to recollect, even in the darkest of places, as you say, the context is always available, even if the content or the content of experience is uncomfortable or gray or bleak or dreary or whatever label we might put on it. Yeah? And we don't quit the process that will allow us to experience ourselves again. Because we know what it is, right? We know what the veil is. We know that I'm lost in the obscuring until the clouds part. But I never doubt that the clouds will part and there's something beyond those clouds, because I know that, right? That's what I have. That's what my practice years have built faith in.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing the how, because we do find ourselves in those places, and the process lesson is to never quit, despite what the voices are saying, however believable it is. Because I love that part that you said. Right, June, because we found the answer because you were participating. And for me, it's such a sweet experience to know that the intelligence that animates is seeking me too, right? That call and that response. And the story that goes with that is the guy walking on the beach and sees only one pair of footprints in the darkest of times. And there it is. And then we realize, oh, I was carried. I was beautifully guided. That was a lesson I had to learn. And if there is non-separation, you realize the person who always walks with you has to be you, right?
Yes. Yeah. And the other piece of it that is so clear is the refuges, you know, just keep taking refuge in first Sangha. Really, I don't know why it's third on the list, but just keep returning to the teaching,
Keep coming. Keep looking for the grace, taking refuge in what you know is a refuge. Because there, I think we're training for making that choice, right? I'm choosing oneness, not separation. I'm choosing oneness, I'm not separation. I might feel like I'm separate and isolated and alone and hate the world and want to die or suicidal or whatever it is, but I'm choosing oneness, and then we experience oneness. Not conditionally, but unconditionally.
Yep.
Yeah.
you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, June. And Ashwini, I love that message of never quitting. And just keep showing up. Just keep showing up. Mm-hmm. And everybody here tonight has done that. Continue mm-hmm. to practice.
And if I may, Michael, it's not just not quitting, right? It's not quitting practice.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Excellent point. Thank you. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, it's Laura calling from Montreal.
Hey, Laura. Laura.
Hi. Well, I listened to get a cue, so here I am. And, so I'm not sure what I want to talk about. It occurred to me, actually, today, that I respond so differently in situations that I used to respond. I'm going to finish the sentence. I respond differently now with practice in situations that I responded, the same situation that I responded to before practice. And And I am so grateful. You know, it just brings me to tears. I am so grateful for practice. And I love that, don't quit practice, because I can't imagine. I don't want to imagine my life without practice.
And you don't have to, right?
and I don't have to. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, today I got some information from a family member who has just discovered she's facing a real health challenge. And the same one that one of my other sisters has already faced twice. And so it's, I'm having these emotions, I'm having these feelings, I'm crying, and yet there is beneath that, there is a peace, and there's a real clear knowledge that no matter what happens, there's nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that you experience all these emotions, and yet underneath that, there's that clear sense of there's nothing wrong. It's peaceful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And so it's kind of like with that foundation, I can be really present with her and with me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, Sherry often says that the best gift that you can offer anyone is for you to have the experience that there's nothing wrong, right? That mm-hmm. sense of presence that you're pointing to. And Laura, I project that is a, you know, it's so not our conditioned orientation. So there's something that's challenging or hard or difficult, and the reaction has to be appropriate, right? There's an escalation of emotion that's appropriate, but to feel peaceful, it's a contradiction, right? And what we have, what we get to have as awareness practitioners who practice is that expanded awareness where the context of there's nothing wrong holds whatever goes on for us.
Yes.
As human beings, right? There's no business that lives. I mean, it sometimes takes a little bit to get used to being able to be in that place that you're pointing at, which is such a level of presence that you can have your experience, she can have her experience, and all of it, no matter what the circumstances are still held in that container of there's nothing wrong. This is just life unfolding, and all of us are having the experience of that life unfolding.
Right, exactly. And And just, you know, one more little kind of adjunct. And so periodic, every certain number of, every 2 weeks, all of my siblings and I have a Zoom call. And I had changed it. And they all agreed, you know, from one day to another day. But I'd forgotten that I had changed it. And so I thought it was today. And I texted this sister because she always needs a little reminder. And she came on and she said, I thought we changed it. And I went, yes, we did. And she said, but it's good to, you know. And then she told me this information. And when I realized that I had gotten the wrong day, I could see conditioning wanting to come in and blame me for, you know, not being, for getting something quote unquote wrong. And yet the fact that I had that opportunity to speak to my sister one-on-one, and it was such a precious time, you know, it's like it brings me back to, I don't know, I'm letting life guide, and I am not going to second-guess anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such a, those are just instances where we know we're loved. Right.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And it's fun. It's fun that you're doing. We're doing a year-long class that's on eating blame, right? Okay. Well, I called.
Exactly.
Oh, did you? You go. Oh, I did change it. And so, but now we're here. We're here now. So let's engage, right? Because the present moment is offering this interaction. Who cares about who got it wrong?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. It was such a gift.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we didn't get to this with our previous caller, but it seems like the present, if we're present, the experience we have is love. Like, we're loved, we're completely guided, we have an interaction in love.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, which brings me back to gratitude.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. And let me find our next caller here, Ashwini. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Art.
Hi, Art.
Hey, Art.
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Michael. Well, I got very interested in the first topic, and also interested in the keeping commitments. You know, the new offerings, the quarterly offerings. Mm-hmm. I was just starting to drowse off to sleep when I got called. So anyway, it's perfect timing. I've been really enjoying the year-long retreat, and I also have been was trying to blame me and sort of blame me, but also, I guess, give me a beating and sort of project into the future that I'll never do any extra work, like the recording and listening training, the keeping commitment buddies, and the reflective listening buddies, you know. And so I'd like to sign up this time around. And really, that's pretty much, you know, what I wanted to bring up, and, you know, the resistance to all that.
Of course. Right. Exactly. So here you are enjoying practice and enjoying the insights of the year long and realizing, oh, well, I could do more practice.
Yeah.
And of course there's resistance, right? And we know how to work with the resistance, which is accept that it exists and then go right ahead and do what you're told you're not supposed to do or you don't want to do.
Right.
Realizing it's not you that doesn't, you actually want to, and that voice in your head is trying to talk you out of it.
Yeah.
And you said something really important, Art, right, which we just kind of glossed over, but we talk about it all the time. The self-hate is supposed to make you feel bad and keep you there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when we catch on that self-hate is self-hate and pay attention to what came before, which is the impulse to sign up for these programs, you go ahead and sign up for the program. Because the self-hate is supposed to make you feel so bad that you forget about actually signing up for the program.
Yeah.
Yeah? So it looks like you saw through that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And of course, I think that ego is saying, well, you know, it's gonna extend into every single decision that I make, or that, you know, and so it's almost like it's almost like I've been conditioned. That there's been a projection. It's almost as though I'm conditioned to believe a negative projection, you know, something projecting negatively on me. And I'm, it's just sort of dropping in that there isn't any me to project negatively onto.
Yeah. That we are conditioned, right? I mean, if we examine what conditioned mind is, it's a negative function, and it's constantly projecting.
Yeah.
We're just confused that that's who we are. But when we're not confused that's who we are, we can see it for what it is—a projection of negativity, which you don't have to have. It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
And that statement you made so casually, Art, is so it, right? It takes years of practice to get there. Huh. There's a program that's negative that keeps projecting onto me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's
yeah.
not the me. That's not
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I sure appreciate this you know, the radio show, and I appreciate I called it my Zen practice today. You know, I brought it up. You know, it's some ding. I just got a ding. one of my random wake up dings. Anyway, it was fun. I just said my Zen practice, my practice. You know, and it's wonderful. I have a practice now, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. That is it, right? That when you love something, I can't remember. I think it was in The Little Prince that it's my rose. As soon as we have a loving relationship to it, our relationship to something changes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Art.
Okay. Bye-bye. Gotcha. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Art. And Ashwini, I think we have time for at least one more caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Marianne calling from Canada.
Hey, Marianne.
I'm mostly calling in to say that I am going to have a chance to really be present, and it's been a little challenging. I am singing a duet at a recital. The piano plays a melody that isn't anything that we're singing, and my partner sings about four bars behind me.
I can see the requirement for presence here, Marian.
And I have to hold my own. And I had a rehearsal, and it was a little bit enlightening, but it was quite hard because I know the piece, but I would go off or I'd miss the beat, and my teacher got very frustrated with me, and I just kept saying, I have to just be present. I have to be present. And I noticed that I shrank to about a 2-year-old in that experience. Mm-hmm. So I've been recording and listening, and well, after that I went and recorded and listened. And, you know, I didn't beat myself up. I was as present as I could be, but, you know, it feels like the stakes are higher than I've ever gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you, there's so much practice in that, in the approach, right, Marianne? So here you are doing something that you love to do, and somebody gets upset with you or frustrated with you, and the thing that you do is to go record and listen, which really is, it's sort of what we were talking about earlier. The only way to be present is to practice being present. And the way to practice being present is to talk to your recorder, right?
Yes, and, you know, and I just think that, you know, I know that singing forces me to be present, but I just feel like I wasn't quite ready for this experience of...
And that's so important, right? So important to get how we're tricked into believing that we know. So I've been before you practiced your piece and you know your piece, you had to be in a process of knowing your piece. Then the assumption is just because you know your piece, you're going to be able to do it flawlessly the first time with two other people. But until you do it, you don't realize what is involved, and that then it takes practice, and then you keep practicing until you get to that place of perfection or presence or whatever is called for. And the most important thing I project, right, Marianne, is that you know how to be with yourself however it goes, because that's another version of presence, right?
Yes.
Because it may go well, it may not go well, but you know how to be with yourself regardless.
Yes,
in terms of not indulging a beating.
Yes, nothing wrong. What I noticed was, in a way, I just wondered if ego had taken over my practice in my music, because I went in feeling confident that I knew how to do this, and I discovered I didn't. And so the shrinking was the, I guess, the ego going, feeling diminished by criticism. And I realized that that was, that was the week we were doing No Blame. So mm-hmm. I just went, okay, yeah. There's nobody here to blame. This is just what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And the as the that the dispassionate awareness of what is going on. Yeah, because the self-hate, the beating would be you should have known better, but you didn't, because you couldn't have. And so the conditioned reaction is to make you feel small, because we've been so conditioned that if you didn't know, if you were confident and then you shouldn't be, and we hear the consequences of that. And here there's evidence to prove what happens to people who go around thinking that they know. And yet, when we bring a whole bunch of compassion to the process, we just have a different perspective of what unfolds.
Yeah, I think what it showed me was that I've been conditioned for a long time to live up to some standards, mm-hmm. that I had a kind of a conditioning that I knew, I know, but it was ego knowing, and so I'm just working with myself as I practice to see how my body knows this music, mm-hmm. how it knows it without the blah 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 of the head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
and how life gently allows us to be with ourselves with no standards, because that's what happens when we blow something, right? According
yeah.
to ego, it's our best opportunity to be with ourselves in love, loving yeah. kindness. Yeah.
Anyways, I just wanted to share this kind of little journey. So thank you for doing
that, and good luck if the performance is coming up. Record it at the ready.
Yes. Thank you so much. And thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Marianne.
Yes, show.
Thanks for joining us, Marianne. And thank you, Ashwini. And thank you, everyone, for a great show.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, everybody. Go happy.
Go happy.